The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Three guys with beards.
The Project Entertainment Network store, featuring t-shirts, mugs, stickers, hoodies, and more from your favorite Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
Inkstains, Scribbler's Rest.
The Horror Show with Brian Keane.
Why not show your loyalty by wearing a cool product from the podcast group and show off to your friends?
It Cooks.
Armcast.
The Mondo Method Monster Attack.
Necrocastical.
Go to projectentertainmentnetwork.com and click on the store tab for more details.
The Liars Club Podcast.
Bizarre. The Lunch Ladies Book Club.
Matters of Faith.
The Project Entertainment Network Store. Stacked with stuff from the best podcasts on the internet.
The Curtain Jerkers.
Buttercup of Doom.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
Do you read Sutter Kane?
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit.
It was an accident. About an hour ago, a small jet went down inside New York City. The president was on board.
President of what? Call me Snake.
Today is Mommy's Day.
Welcome to the NecroCasticon.
You gotta be fucking kidding.
I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left. No reason, no conscience, no understanding, and even the most rudimentary sense of life or death, of good or evil, right or wrong.
Welcome to Volume 3, Chapter 28 of the NecroCasticon. We are the podcast that blends horror and heavy metal with a comic connection right here on the Project Entertainment Network. My name is Mr. Scott. I'll be at the helm this week. Token Tom Clark will be joining us a little bit later on in the show. But don't worry, I still have my brothers in arms always backing me up here to give you their knowledge of horror and heavy metal. First of all, he's our resident music critic and reviewer, Smokin' Wall Ball. Hey, Walt.
Woo, woo, woo.
You know it. And, of course, our favorite artist and the caretaker of the mortuary himself, Azrael Mordecai.
Woohoo! Check me out, everybody. I'm dancing. Mm-hmm. I lost the beat, but oh, yeah.
Make it rain. Make it rain. Make it rain. And, yes, I was unfortunately not able to join the show last week. Wife was a little under the weather, so I had to help take care of her. So we had someone on then to take my spot. And since this week Tom can't be here, why not invite that same person back to take his spot? Welcome back to the NecroCasticon, our favorite head hauntress herself, Elizabeth Catherine Gray.
Do you know what Jack Burton says?
I know what Max Burton says.
What the hell?
What the hell, exactly. Listen to the NecroCasticon.
There you go. Welcome back,
she's like
Elizabeth.
Liz is like our fifth Beatle now.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Am I George Martin? Is that what you're saying?
I told Axel Lennox, though, he was the fifth Beatle of the NecroCasticon, so he's got to share that title.
Yeah, I guess so.
She's just the guy that replaced Paul McCartney when he died in the car wreck.
There you go. Yeah, she is the walrus. Cuckoo, ca-choo, Elizabeth Gray.
Something in the way she moves. Yeah, I could do that. I can see it.
Perfect. So the show this week is inspired by what Token Tom is actually doing, because he is going to see John
fapping.
Carpenter, that too. But while he's going to see John Carpenter live, he'll probably be fapping. And that is the inspiration for our main discussion this week, which is the movies of John Carpenter. So that's going to be our main discussion this week. Plus, we will be touching upon some other things happening in the world of metal and horror. Walter has got his review this week. The Smoker is a little bit light this week, but not because for anything else than just the fact of he just had more stuff to do last week. So who's in the Smoker this week, bud?
Our good friends at In Flames.
Oh.
I don't know if they're gonna be our friends after this review, though.
Really?
You know I love In Flames, or loved at one point. We'll talk about that later.
So basically, after tonight, In Flames is gonna be flaming us, as you're saying that.
We're pretty much extinguishing In Flames.
This album sucks so bad; it's going down in a raging inferno.
Yeah,
but I'm ching. And
this is an unscheduled review too. This is actually the review of In Flames is actually unannounced and like surprised like by In Flames. We're I'll talk about it later.
Right. And also Oz will take us down the mortuary. He's going to give us some language lessons. If you're a Better Off Dead fan, you know what that means. And we'll be looking forward to that. Plus, I'm going to give you my quick review of Jigsaw. I finally got to go see that movie this past week. And, of course, Elizabeth is here. We're going to be talking about what she's going to have coming up on her program as well. All kinds of fun stuff going on here on the NecroCastCon. So let's get the business segment out of the way.
On a quick side note before we get into business.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard the urban legend about the Jigsaw movies?
The urban legend?
There's like a fan theory that says that Kevin from the Home Alone movies grew up to become Jigsaw.
That makes no sense. That makes absolutely no sense.
The worst part is, if you listen to a couple of these, after about 10 minutes, you're going, you know, I can see it.
Yeah. You know?
The traps and also...
No.
Home and Bell. Bell does kind of like a middle-aged Macaulay Culkin.
He looks like an old Macaulay Culkin. That's why it doesn't work. Well, that being said, let's do the business now. Do you want to advertise your business right here on the NecroCastCon? You like to sponsor the show? Of course you would. How would you do that? Go to ProjectEntertainmentNetwork.com. Click on the advertising link right there on the homepage, and you can become a sponsor, just like the great folks at Subculture Corsets and Clothing.
Hey, NecroCast fans, looking for something out of the box to wear? Then visit SubcultureCorsets.com. Subculture Corsets and Clothing carries all the unusual clothing and accessory brands for the steampunk, gothic, apocalypse, rockabilly, and pinup scenes. Or perhaps you're into the Victorian goth. Whatever you freaks are into, most likely Subculture Corsets and Clothing will have something for you. If you're a curvy lady, Subculture offers sizes 4 through 4X and men's clothing as well, so no excuses. Visit SubcultureCorsets.com now for the new exciting piece. Or visit their store at the Avenues Mall in Jacksonville, Florida, located a half mile off Interstate I-95. When checking out at Subculture's website, use the discount code NecroCastCon for 10% off your entire order. That's SubcultureCorsets.com. Discount code NecroCastCon. Check them out now.
But of course, another way you can help us out is by going to patreon.com/projectentnet. That's Project E-N-T-N-E-T. And for as little as Walter is rubbing his microphone against his beard once again, you can become a patron of the entire network for as little as
$1.
Yeah, me too. He always does this when I'm doing my thing, but I think it's my voice. It just turns him on. See, he's still doing it.
Rubber.
There's the noise. There it was. There was the chipmunk. There was the chipmunk fap.
That's the sound of Walt sticking his fingers in a mayonnaise jar.
The man mayo.
That's Tom at the Palace Theater in Syracuse right now.
Yeah, that's true. So, yes, patreon.com/projectentnet. Go there and sign up to become a patron of the entire network. It's for as little as $1 a month. $12 a year, folks. That's all you have to give. But the more you give, the more you get. The more you contribute, the better the awards are to you as a patron. What are those awards, you ask? The only way to find out is to go to patreon.com/projectentnet and sign up today. You can download this podcast and all your favorite podcasting outlets. We're on Stitcher, Roku, Apple Podcasting, iHeartRadio, anywhere and everywhere they've got podcasting, you can find us. Please give us a ranking, a rating, or a comment, and subscribe to the show. That way we're there automatically for your listening pleasure every single week. And don't forget to follow all of our social media. Just look for the NecroCastCon on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Speaking of social media, you can find me, Mr. Scott, on Twitter at HeadstrongStyle, because I am the king of Headstrong Style. Walter, how about you?
You can find me on the Twitter at YourWaltHades, or you can find me on Instagram at Smokin_Walt_Hades.
And Azrael, how do we find you?
I find you.
See, I knew he was going to do something like that. Scares me every time.
You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, DeviantArt, all that stuff. Look for Azrael Mordecai, Ghoulish Art, or Ghoulish Art Studios.
And Ms. Gray, how do people find you on the internet?
You can mostly find me on Facebook on the Archivist Bets on Sexy Witches podcast page, or on my personal page, Elizabeth Catherine Gray. Or you can also find me on Twitter at The Sexy Witches, which is also a good way to find me on the web. And we're on Blog Talk, usually bi-monthly for my podcast.
Very cool, very cool. So
More sexy witches.
Totally. God.
I agree.
Life in general needs more sexy witches, in my opinion. So with that in mind, we do kind of have to start the show this week, folks, on a bit of a down note, and that is the untimely passing of a guy that's an iconic member of an iconic group.
You could really say his battery ran out.
Yeah, basically, he had some mental issues and things like that, and just it was just time to go, unfortunately. And that, of course, is the passing of Malcolm Young from AC/DC. Yes, the brother of Angus, but he can't be known just as that. I mean, this is a guy who is laying down the rhythm for this band for years and years. He has heavily contributed to the writing of the music of the band. So
he was the leader of the band. He was pretty much the boss.
Pretty much.
He didn't try to hire anybody to kill his wife.
Yeah, that is true. But yeah, I mean, many of us here are not particularly huge fans of the band, but you cannot deny the influence AC/DC has had. You call them what you want, a rock and roll band, a blues rock band, a hard rock band. Some people call them a heavy metal band for some reason, but you can't deny their influence on heavy metal bands throughout the years. So definitely have to give respect to Malcolm Young for all the contributions he's had. Anyone else out there on the panel here want to give their thoughts about this passing?
Yeah, like I said, Malcolm was the boss of the band. He actually called the shots, but he kept a low profile. And that was, you know, he let Angus and Brian take the stage and, you know, be the showman and such, while he just stayed down and laid down tight, tight rhythms along with Cliff Robertson there. Of course, whoever the drummer was at that time, Paul Rudd. Phil Rudd or... what's his name there? The bald-headed guy, Scott. A lot of people don't understand or realize the contribution and the influence Malcolm Young made in rhythm guitar. He was a very underrated rhythm guitarist, and a lot of those infamous AC/DC riffs were written by him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much any steady song.
Yeah, he was like the Keith Richards of that band. I mean,
yes,
the guy that really held down everything. Well, Angus, you know, is getting all the attentions, you know, duck walking across the stage and shit. You know, Malcolm was the guy really kind of pulling all the weight and doing all the work. And he really was the unsung hero of that band.
Yeah, and any major song for the band you can think of that you know, folks, that anybody's heard in passing or is a dying fan of, thank Malcolm for it. Yeah, it's pretty simple as that. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
I was going to say they're multi-generational, and this is an example. My daughter just did her first School of Rock camp this summer. Guess what song they taught her?
For those about
you shook
rock,
me.
TNT and Dynamite. And you want to see an 8-year-old bouncing around the stage singing TNT? It's so metal, it's so cute and terrible and wonderful all at the same time. I mean it's amazing. I've been singing his song since I was in high school. I mean, come on. But Biggest Balls of Them All is like my favorite song of all time.
Yeah, and that, yeah, can't deny the coming from me and Walt's background, can't deny the AC/DC influence on wrestling, of course. Back sure. In black, Big Balls. And Vince McMahon tweeted about Malcolm Young dying. That kind of says something. When he says something about it, I think that means something. So go ahead. I think somebody else is going to make a comment about it. Go ahead. Well, I guess not.
I'll make a comment.
Go ahead.
My husband always says about AC/DC, and it's a joke, but it's kind of good. You go, they have like two songs, but they play them really, really, really well, and you want to hear them over and over again.
You can make that same joke about Godsmack.
There's
can't. Also the joke about how there's actually a fifth chord hidden in one of their albums somewhere.
I really love the riffs in Thunderstruck. I always like that song. I think stands out, and a lot of people look at their older stuff, but I think Thunderstruck is kind of a seminal record in some ways. So
every time I listen to that one, it's played by this guy in a leather kilt with bagpipes, and he's got flames shooting out the end of him. It's one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Nice. Nice.
The long way to the top, if you want to rock and roll, is definitely a favorite of mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm always Back in Black for me because of Chris Candido. It's a great tune, as well. And
going back to wrestling.
Yep, exactly. Of course, have to. That'll be
actually Guar covered. If you want Blood, You Got It on their recent record.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I still haven't listened to it. That's why I did not know that. That's awesome.
And didn't doesn't Slayer do one of their songs on the cover album? I thought they'd done one. I might be wrong, but
they covered it and it got into Vita.
Yeah, I know that, but that, yeah.
You know who else covered a lot of really you know who else covered a lot of AC/DC? You know who else covered a lot of AC/DC?
Your mom?
Iced Earth.
You know, Highway to Hell is a permanent song on my Halloween mix. Like, oh. You know, Maximum Overdrive wouldn't even be half as good if it wasn't for that song.
Very true.
And he wrote that. Yeah,
that's right. They did provide the soundtrack for that movie.
Yes, they did.
Yes. And there was a movie called Highway to Hell.
Yeah, Who Made Who?
I think it
was in that song. Was in that movie.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's important is whether you like or don't like the band. They had an influence. They had a great ability to write a catchy song. Mm-hmm. They didn't need to, you know, have an Yngwie Malmsteen in the band. They didn't need to have a 40-minute epic to basically just pump out good rock that made people happy. And, you know, I think it's kind of neat. They had a resurgence in the last couple of years with Axl Rose fronting. So that was kind of a novelty that actually did kind of work in a way. I enjoyed that more than I have really enjoyed AC/DC. But really the impact that AC/DC has is in the legacy that they leave in the people that they've influenced, the people that have gone on because of the way they write songs to in turn write some great songs of their own. So, you know, that's my thoughts on AC/DC.
Yeah.
As well as Malcolm Young.
Yeah, right there. He says all right there, the influence of that band, how it's carry on throughout years and generations and will continue to carry on throughout years and generations to come. So that's the real mark of a strong band and their staying power and their influence on not just like a genre of music like metal, but music in general. Because there's people all over the world in all different kinds of music they listen to. They know AC/DC, they know songs from AC/DC, and so forth. So it's going to keep the dream alive, if you will. So Malcolm Young to you, sir. We say rest in power, peace to your soul, and respect to your memory always. All right. Well, sad stuff out of the way. Now let's get to the main course of the show this week, and that is the movies of John Carpenter. So many to choose from that we could talk about this week. Let's just pull the name out of the hat here. Who's going to talk about it first? Azrael, we're going to go to you first. Let's talk about some of your favorite John Carpenter movies.
Oh God. Obviously, The Thing is like the seminal John Carpenter movie, so I think we can just get that off the table right now.
Sure.
Everybody who's a fan of horror or special effects has to enjoy that movie. I'm going to start looking towards some of the more obscure stuff. One of my favorite John Carpenter projects of all time is called Body Bags. It's
92, 93, somewhere in that ballpark.
Yep, it's a made-for-TV movie with two stories, I believe. No, three stories. One of which actually stars Mark Hamill, which is cool. Isn't
John in it himself, too?
He plays like a crypt keeper sort of like presenter. He's like a morgue attendant. And then he turns out in the end to actually be a corpse at the morgue, not the attendant. Very cool kind of way to present the movie. There's some really creepy stuff. The one with Mark Hamill is kind of your typical like organ transplant gone wrong story. You know, nothing that is gonna, you know, rewrite the way you look at horror, or you know, you're not gonna immediately freaking want to show it to 50 people. But it is a movie that you can sit back and enjoy, you know, once a year, or you pass it on TV or something if they ever fucking were to play it on TV. But all I gotta say, John Carpenter and Mark Hamill. I mean, how can you go wrong?
That says it all right there.
You're missing, and also Toby Hooper, who is the other director on Body Bags.
That is correct. Yep. Yes, thank you for that. I've discussed this on the show before. I'm not a huge Toby Hooper fan.
I am.
I have a ton of respect for him, but I quick aside, I feel that he tends to be a little overrated. He hasn't really made as many good movies as he's given a lot of credit for.
Well, so is Argento.
I'm not going to deny that either.
Well, we can't talk about Argento with Tom because Tom has like seen like what? No Argento movies.
What? Really?
We bust his balls for this. Tom has never even seen Suspiria, which is like like the movie.
I don't even like Suspiria, and I went to the 4K restoration.
He hasn't seen opera. He hasn't seen
what? Opera's about to have an amazing Blu-ray.
Okay, he may have seen Demons. I believe he's seen.
I thought
Demons.
He did. Yeah, I thought we talked about that.
That doesn't count.
I think he only he didn't do much.
That's only like a tangential freaking.
Oh wait, excuse me. He's seen Dawn of the Dead. Uh-uh. He's seen Dawn of the Dead, which
but
are
that doesn't films. Matter unless you've seen the director's cut.
That's true.
All right. Well, just remind me off air, and I got some serious Italian horror school today.
He hasn't seen Inferno. Yeah, we could pick on poor Tom all night about this.
God, you want some Italian horror? I'll tell you about my ex-girlfriend. Anyway, moving on.
So, other than Body Bags, I also am a big fan of, again, two of his more undersung films, The Mouth of Madness, which is a sort of Lovecraftian film. And then I have to say it, I love Children of the Damned. So I know that movie gets railed. And if I'm not mistaken, Mark Hamill, also in that movie, along with Christopher Reeve, oddly enough. That movie does tend to get railed a bit, but I think it's actually a pretty good movie. And I think it's one of them movies that people will go back to and say, you know what, I think I was a little hard on this the first time around.
Little what? Sorry. You see where my mind's at right now. So,
I do everything a little hard.
I do everything to you. What? I do anything for you. So let's move on now. We'll probably revisit a lot of our choices all together throughout this conversation here. Let's go on to Elizabeth now and give us some of your more prevalent John Carpenter flicks that you enjoy.
All right, so let's continue with Village of the Damned, because I was living literally 10 minutes from that film shoot in Point Reyes Station when that was going down. Sweet. So I was a witness to what was going on. Point Reyes Station vowed to never have a film shoot there ever again. And if you read the there's a Point Reyes Light, which is a newspaper, and they have the, you know, it's a local paper, very small, but you know how those local papers always have the police blotter? You know, this happened like here, this happened going. There. You don't even, I won't even get into details, but let's just say the entire page was filled with things that happened on the film set. Vandalism, drug use, crazy people. It was just insane. But you know, I also expect that. But a little small town like Point Reyes, they're like, and so anyway, but I actually think it adds to the film. So when I watch the movie, I'm like, oh, I know where that is and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, though, my favorite John Carpenter will forever, rest in peace, Roddy Piper, be They Live. I love that movie more than any other film of John Carpenter's. And a lot of people go, why? And I don't know.
Because it's fucking awesome.
It is.
As simple as that. It's fucking awesome.
I saw it as a kid. Okay, I had one of those bunk beds, you know, in the 80s, the really tall ones. Do you remember the really, really tall ones with the ladder?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and I could see into my living room from my bed. And my dad was a night owl and loved horror movies. And, you know, like not new ones, but like psychotronic stuff. And he was watching They Live. And I was sneaking watching it too. Okay, so I'm watching this movie from my bed. Not supposed to be. I'm just way past my bedtime. It's like midnight, right? And my dad's watching this movie. And the big reveal, right? He puts on the glasses. And it was the moment where you see the money that says, this is your God.
This is your God, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I gasped, like physically jumped and gasped, like loudly in this movie. Mm-hmm. And my dad goes, get over here! Like that. I thought I was in so much trouble. Oh my God. So I go down and I go over to Dad and he goes, get over here. This is an amazing movie.
Uh-huh.
And we watch the rest of it together. And it's one of my favorite memories. My father died and I always think about that in particular. So I have a sentimental attachment to They Live. But it's actually really good and it's aging well. And that makes me happy.
You know what I always find funny is when people discuss They Live, they talk about the obvious, you know, like social brainwashing, you know, that sort of thing, you know, those sort of aspects behind the story. But to me, I remember the first time I saw it, it was the first time that I ever had that feeling. After the movie, I should say, it was the first time where I ever experienced that feeling of maybe my parents aren't my parents. You know, that sort of suspicious doubt that you end up getting from, you know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers or that sort of thing. So for me, because I was pretty young when I saw it, and it really kind of freaked me out like that, because it does, it has all those elements that as an adult you see now, you know, the obey, you know, that sort of thing. But the thing that stuck out for me was that the person in front of me could be somebody in somebody else's skin. You know what I mean? And that really freaked me out. So
it also makes you not trust the social divide of the haves and the have nots. It's a very, even though sometimes it hits you over the head with the premise hammer, I always feel that, like that
with the homeless guy at the end.
Yeah, like how he crosses over into their side.
Sells
because
out.
Yeah, but people do sell out for very little sometimes. You know, so it scared me as a kid, but it's still plausible as an adult. And I think that's why, like I said, it ages well.
That's that whole thing where, you know, loyalty can be bought cheaply if people are hurting or struggling. You know, as much as I don't really enjoy the show, that's actually something they touched on in the new Star Trek series, where one of the Klingons was able to basically obtain the loyalty of this entire crew because they were starving, you know, so he offered him food. Now all of a sudden he's the man, you know, and that kind of thinking underpins that movie where they're basically gaining subservience by keeping people down and then offering them a morsel that is, you know, a little bit more of a step up from what they've got. Trump's America.
Yeah, I'll touch more upon They Live a little bit later on, but we can move on to Elizabeth's next point, because They Live is one of my tops as well. But
oh, and Meg Foster, man.
Is gorgeous.
Meg Foster, she's amazing on so many levels, and even as an older woman, she might be careworn, but she still got it. Like she's the best thing about 31.
Her eyes just amazed me as a kid.
I get lost in them. God.
I still am amazed, you know, when you look at those eyes, they don't seem like they could be realistic. She was perfect casting for Evil Lynn. The movie sucked, but
yeah,
she was great.
I love that movie, but that's another show.
It's horribly good. or it's badly good, whatever you want to put it. So that's a couple of great picks so far, Elizabeth. You got any more in there in the pile? I'm sure you do.
Oh my God. Oh, well, he already said Mouth of Madness, which I think is kind of, even though horror geeks love it, not a lot of mainstream people have seen it. And I think that Sam Neill's best performance is in that film. You know, so there's that. What else? John Carpenter.
And that was right around Jurassic Park era too. So, I mean, you know, that was fairly big casting at the time.
He's better in this movie than he is in Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park's a pretty straightforward. You could put almost any superstar in that movie, and it would be the same film. In Mouth of Madness, he has to literally, like, him and what's her name again? The second lady, she literally bends over backwards to make that role happen. You know what I'm saying? So let's see. John Carpenter. Oh, well, we can talk about Escape from New York. And
absolutely.
I just rewatched Big Trouble in Little China this afternoon for you guys.
Mm-hmm. So give us a take on that.
That is an all-time classic.
Mm-hmm. Big Trouble is, I actually, okay, here's a good question. Maybe, Scott, you can lead on this because this is your show. But, you know, there's always the Jake Plissken versus Jack Burton fight. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I lean towards Jack Burton. I think he has more heart. I think he's more of a badass. Like Snake Plissken is unapproachable. Like, you can't get near him. He's hard. He's, you know, he knows do the right thing. But Jack Burton, he lets people creep in, and he actually cares about his friends.
Well, Jack's a hero who wants to be a hero. Snake does not want to be a hero. He's an anti-hero. He doesn't
Snake
want to do
is,
it. So.
Snake is, this is the dichotomy. Snake is Clint Eastwood's man with no name. Jack mm-hmm. Burton is John Wayne.
Oh, absolutely. It's John Wayne. It is the John Wayne. No, if you watch I just rewatched the movie, and he's doing John Wayne the entire film. And then you watch Death Proof, and he's doing John Wayne as Jack Burton in Death Proof. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, watch yes. it. Compare the two.
But yeah. the reason that Snake is the guy who would win in a fight between those two is because Snake would bite your balls off.
Mm-hmm. He's a survivor.
That's true.
He's a survivor.
Jack Burton's too much of a nice guy.
Yeah.
He wouldn't kick you in the balls unless he really, really had to. Snake would kick you in the balls.
He's a little too high strung.
Snake winning is the only option. So
yeah.
He has to
survive.
It's
all about, there's an advantage. I take it.
That's what he's trained to do.
Jack,
yeah.
Jack jumps to conclusions.
That's why everybody thinks he should be taller.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I'm out no more.
Now we're in my area. I love those movies. I probably should have picked those because I do watch, you know, the Big Trouble in Little China and both the Escape movies. I enjoy, you know, you got Bruce Campbell in the second one. So as bad as it is, you got to enjoy it. But, you know, to me, those are more fun movies than serious movies, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I kind of judge them in a slightly different light than I judge something like Prince of Darkness.
I always found Prince of Darkness boring. I've tried so many times to sit down and try to get into it because everyone's like, oh, it's so, you know, you got to watch it and study it. If you look deeper into it, it's such a better film. You know?
It does have that awesome scene with the chick where she thinks the other chick's coming on to her. She's like climbing on top of her in on the cot. And she's like, I don't do that. And like she like yaks all over her face. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're a kid, that first 2 minutes of that scene is just awesome. You know what I mean?
It's a better concept than execution with Prince of Darkness. Like, there's a lot of interesting things in that film, especially like the mirror and the two worlds.
Alice Cooper is not one of those interesting things.
No, it should be, but he's not. He's interesting, but not that interesting. Not compared to like the Liquid, and it's, you know, Liquid is not really an American thing. If you watch a lot of Asian horror, you see imagery like that, like with the you know, liquid coming out of people's eyes or going through mirrors and shit. But you don't see it in American films. So there's progressiveness. The very, very last part of that movie is extremely interesting and progressive, but as a whole, the movie doesn't quite gel. It seems like it needs to go a little farther than it does.
It's very hard to get into.
It does seem like somebody had a real solid idea and then some editor came in and fucked shit up. It's the only way I can put it. Because to me, it does seem like there's a lot of stuff just kind of missing that should be there to make that story make sense. Ultimately, I kind of feel like you're just left with a lot of cool ideas and visuals, and everything just kind of feels flat. The most memorable part about that entire movie for me is the fact that they used the nightmare voiceover. You know, we're recording to you from the year 21, you know, whatever. They use that in Marilyn Manson's cover of Gary Newman's Down in the Park, which I think is fucking awesome. So that's, you know, like my best memory and, you know, highest compliment about that movie.
Well, we're about halfway through the panel here talking about John Carpenter's movie, so I think it's a good time to take a break. And we come back, we're going to listen to our buddy Token Tom. He's going to try to get some reactions to folks at the John Carpenter concert he's at right now. And after that, we'll get back to the John Carpenter discussion. Me and Walt will talk about our fave John Carpenter movies and get to our smoker, The Mortuary, my review of Jigsaw, and more from the Head Huntress. Stay tuned.
You're listening to American Top 40. More tragedy in the news today. Kim Kardashian has a new baby.
What the hell? There's nothing good to listen to.
Hey, wait, what's this?
You gotta roll that
out. See, it makes me do weird things, and I like it.
God damn it.
I'd be going down on myself?
Shit.
Hey guys, it's Bill,
Mick,
Maya,
and Junior
from the Unsupervised Podcast.
Check us out every Thursday on the Project Entertainment Network.
Take a break from the stress of the world and come have a laugh with or at us.
Bill.
This is Jimmy Falco from Follow Humanity, and you're listening to the Necrocasticon.
Hey, this is Jamie Engle of Origins, a bi-weekly podcast that shares the story behind legends and lore, where myth and science meet. If you like stories with a supernatural slant, get your bi-weekly fix every Monday at 4, when I share the origins of things that go bump in the night, urban legends, classic monsters, and current sightings of those creatures who normally hide in the shadows. Plus, each chapter features a short story related to the bi-weekly topic. So go ahead and subscribe, binge, and grab some amazing swag through Project Entertainment Network on Patreon. And if you want to nerd out on transcripts and book links, head over to podcastorigins.com.
So I'm at the Palace Theater in Syracuse, New York, on the last night of John Carpenter's anthology tour. And I'm hanging out with Matt Sampier from Sampier.
Hi, everybody.
And that's me.
How you guys doing?
And Jimmy Falco from Fall of Humanity.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
Now, you guys, as musicians and horror fans, John Carpenter means a lot to you. What is it about him as a horror director, Matt, that stands out to you the most?
I mean, just his music, for sure. If he didn't have his, if he wasn't writing the music, putting his own music in the movies, then it would just take the whole feel away from it, because he's directing it, he's writing it, and putting, he does all of it. And that's what makes it so great. He has complete control over everything.
Okay.
That's one thing I would really
say. Kind of like you in a self-titled band.
Yeah, new comment. Or new question.
Now, Jimmy, as a musician, what is it about Carpenter's composing that stands out to you?
I think what stands out mainly for his scores that he does on his films, it's a very pulsy kind of vibe that he, you know, strikes into the audience, like during Halloween, how there's always like a, there's like a little, there's a beat always behind it, like a ticker that keeps you on that as you're seeing, you don't know where it's going. I think he does that for a lot of his films, and it's very effective. You know, it's very simple, but it's effective. And I think throughout every one of his films, he kind of achieves that with how he composes his scores like that.
How has he influenced you as a songwriter?
As a songwriter, definitely simplicity. Like I said, you know, keeping melodies simple. You know, leaving room for, well, for rock and metal, for vocals to do their own work, but nothing really, like, movie score-wise.
Right.
All of his music is just, it's very catchy, like Jimmy said. It is very simple, but as soon as you hear it once, you know it.
Like, Halloween's got that distinct hook to it. Escape from New York theme has a distinct hook to it. In the Mouth of Madness has that guitar riff in it.
Oh, yeah. Even the music on his records now sound just as good as something you'd hear in Halloween. Or Escape from New York, and it just, I mean, as soon as you hear it, you instantly recognize his music.
Yeah, the lost themes that he did, those albums he did are unbelievable. Some of them, like Matt said, could be in any one of his films and be just as effective as the score that is in the film.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Now, tonight we're going to be getting his work that he did with other composers, too, not just his own, like Ennio Morricone for The Thing.
That's going to be great.
I didn't even know about that.
Yep.
You didn't know about that?
I didn't even, I don't know.
The Thing.
Dun, dun.
I didn't know what was happening tonight.
Dude, that's the guy, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, dude, man.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Come on. It's going to be good now.
He's showing his youth.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm like 12, so it's okay. I haven't.
You look like you're 12. You aren't 12.
Seen okay. Halloween yet. My parents won't let me.
But you made a good point where Ennio Morricone with the score for The Thing, just that's the perfect example of simplicity. Just those two notes that are just constant, and then just, you know, he puts strings underneath them to
three notes.
Well, whatever.
Do you think that John Carpenter made the sound of the 80s?
Sound of the 80s?
For horror movies.
Yes.
A huge, definitely a grandfather of setting the tone for the rest of the slasher films throughout the rest of the decade and everything else, really.
Maybe not the music. His music is definitely very influential, but the way that 80s slasher movies and, you know, just horror movies through the 80s and early 90s went was very Carpenter-like. If not for Halloween and Halloween 2, I mean, horror probably wouldn't be as popular as it is today.
Yeah, I have to agree. Friday the 13th was an answer to Halloween.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
John Carpenter's music or Goblin?
What's that?
John Carpenter's music or Goblin?
John Carpenter.
What the hell is
John Carpenter? Yeah,
Goblin. Goblin does all the Italian movies, all the demons movies.
That's all right. I'll take, you know, American horror and,
yeah,
you know, take it out of the gothic castles. That's why I like Halloween so much.
There we go.
There you go. It's from Village of the Damned. Songs are from Lost Themes, the soundtracks to the movies in your mind. This one is politely called Vortex.
Yeah, that's a good one.
City of the Dead.
This is Jarvis Leatherby from the band Night Demon, and you're listening to the Necrocasticon.
Lieutenant Stars, can you hear each week on the Curtain Jerkers Wrestling Podcast? Booker Max Burton proceeds over our panel of wrestling analysts. Ring announcer Walter Ball. South Florida indie correspondent Steve Mesa. Northeast indie correspondent The Viking Brian Burke. Classic feuds dissected. Indie rivalry and common sense. It's the stable that shoots while it works. Fridays at 6:05 on Superstation PEN on the Curtain Jerkers Wrestling Podcast.
This is Zaddy Poo. You're listening to the Necrocasticon. Booyah!
Back to part two now of our John Carpenter discussion. So we heard a great list of movies from Osrael. We heard a great list of movies from Elizabeth. Walter, let's go to you now with some of your John Carpenter faves.
Okay, well, I'm not going to fire off the usual because Oz and Liz both covered that. I mean, I love Halloween. I mean, actually, neither one of them mentioned Halloween, but yeah, Halloween, of course, that's natural. We've talked about Halloween to death on the show anyways. Mm-hmm. And the
whole
thing
debate
is
about that a few weeks ago on the show, which is a big favorite everybody out there. So,
right. And the thing is a favorite of mine, of course, too. I'm going to cover in Big Trouble Little China. Love that. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cover two of my favorite Carpenter films that we have not mentioned. The first one is actually, in my opinion, the most frightening, the most dark in terms of ambience and visuals and cadence of the John Carpenter horror films, and that is The Fog.
I knew you were going to say that.
I thought you were going to say Elvis.
I knew
movie.
It, too.
Oh, yeah.
Elvis.
Yes. Yeah, that's a big favorite, you and the wife. I know that.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It pretty much takes place entirely at night. And it's a very dark film, not just in terms of tone, but it is a dark film. You know, I mean,
it is very horrible remake.
Oh, fuck the remake.
Don't even mention the remake.
I spent the entire remake waiting for Tom Welling to rip his shirt open and have the Superman costume on.
Yeah. Just in terms of ambience, and of course, Adrian Barbeau, which is a favorite among many John Carpenter fans. Which I think she was married to John for a little bit. I don't know.
Lucky son of a bitch.
Yes.
She scared me.
Did she scare you?
Yeah, when I met her, she's the only like celebrity that I've ever been like really intimidated by. And she didn't do anything. She was perfectly lovely. But she stood next to me and I was a 5-year-old kid, just like, oh my God. You know, and it was weird because in one side of my head, it's like she kind of reminds me of Estelle Getty. But on the other side of it's Adrienne Barbeau, you know? Amazing, like, charisma, I guess you could say.
I met her this year at Monster Mania, actually.
It's amazing how tiny she is, right?
Well, I'm short anyway, so everyone's taller than me. Right.
Not to mention Jamie Lee Curtis and Tom Atkins are both in it.
Yes, they are. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
What needs thrown in is Kurt Russell, and you got the Fab Four, Fab Four of the Fab Four of the John Carpenter movies of the early 80s. Yep.
And it's a good movie because it doesn't really spell everything out for you too. It leaves a lot of stuff open, like, you know, a lot of unanswered questions, but not necessarily plot holes.
Yes. And it doesn't really end on a very solid note either. I mean, it's pretty dark, you know. Just also a very scary film. Just like, and also just the presence of the fog and what is within the fog. I mean, you don't really get an idea of what's in the fog until it comes, and of course, at the very end, you know, you get the general picture there. And it's still very dark and frightening.
It's like John Carpenter doing gothic horror.
Absolutely, absolutely. Actually, you know what? It had a very Italian horror vibe to it as well.
Yep, I can see that. Definitely like the cliff shots, the scenic shots, especially with the fog coming in. You know, it definitely reminds you of something like you'd see in like a Jess Franco film or like a Peter Nashe flick or something.
Speaking of that, Walt, what do you call an Italian fog?
What?
A big mist. Good night, everybody. No, moving on.
It had an Italian feel to it. All it needed was some Pepto Bismol colored blood, and it would have been Carpenter's Italian horror movie.
Lots of tempera paint.
Yeah. The other film I'm going to mention is the 1998 Vampires with James Woods.
I love that movie so much.
Yep, that was on my list.
Definitely one of his most quotables, his most quotable films too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
James Woods definitely makes the movie a lot of fun. If there was anybody else in that role, the film would have been subpar, honestly, because the storyline is very A to B.
The only other guy I could see doing it is Bruce Campbell
or Lance Henriksen.
Can we say something about John Carpenter and his sense of location? Because I think this movie. It shows it at his best example. Even when he's not shooting at location like Big Trouble Little China, the influence of the cities that he's filming in creeps into all his movies, all of them. And I think that's amazing. And this movie in particular, I think does that.
It's very hot and dry because it's in the desert of the Southwest there.
I stayed at the hotel in Las Vegas, New Mexico, where they shot that.
Ah, okay.
I actually lived in Carlsbad, New Mexico for a while for the Park Service. And so that movie is – those places are all real locations. I know where everything is in that film.
Very nice.
Yeah, so for some reason, I live near John Carpenter movies when he's shooting. Who knew? Yeah.
Coincidence?
Worst curses to have.
Yeah. Not to mention, also, you know, a nice touch. A nice touch about vampires. It also includes, if you're a Twin Peaks fan, it's got the lovely, you know, Laura Palmer in it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a big plus too. When she's laying on the bed there, and the fat Baldwin brother gets to rub all over her. Oh yeah.
Shirley didn't do a lot of movies.
Shirley, yeah.
She did like a handful. She there's another actress around that same time, Deborah Foreman.
Yes.
Both very similar features, very similar, gorgeous women. And you wanted to see more of them, and then they both just kind of disappeared, and it kind of sucks. But luckily, both have come back in the last few years and have been doing really good, so that's awesome. Yep.
Deborah Foreman was in Valley Girl. I think she was in My Chauffeur, and she was also in Waxworks, yes.
Oh, yeah.
She was also in April Fool's Day, the original April Fool's Day, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
That is correct, yes.
Sorry, sidetrack.
No, that's fine. That's our show, man. You know that.
The Fog and Vampires.
Fog and Vampires. There you go. Quite the eclectic list we have going on.
How come nobody's brought up the epic Ghosts of Mars?
With the soundtrack.
I want to defend that film a little bit.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
It's not great, but it's not horrible.
The narrative is, it's there, right? But the sense of design in that film, especially of the once they go all full-on crazy motherfuckers, excuse my French, I really actually enjoyed all the body modification stuff in that film. I think it's a little on the edge, actually.
Now, from what I understand, Carpenter was trying to get Marilyn Manson to portray the villain in that movie.
Really?
I can see that.
Yes. Yep. Well, the villain is somewhat Manson-esque.
Mm-hmm. He actually dabbled in science fiction a lot more than we give him credit for. A lot of people look at him as horror, but he also did Starman and Dark Star.
Now you're getting into my list because that's fine. So many of these movies are going to overlap into different lists, but my list that I had really none of them. Very few of them are really considered horror movies because, yes, definitely vampires on my list there. The wife and I, we revisited that one around Halloween. Always a favorite. James Woods owns that movie from top to bottom. And, of course, the classics like Halloween and The Thing, of course, have to be in there too. But adding Starman to that list, I grew up, as a young kid who loved sci-fi movies, and this falls right into that category. Some goofy-ass scenes, when Jeff Bridges is smoking the cigarette for the first time in the truck and he yaks all over the place. When you're 9 years old, that's hilarious. So that was a fun movie to check out. I like Christine. I think that Christine's a good example of a John Carpenter movie there. I like the story. I like the whole development of that, too. But number one on the list for me, of course, like we said earlier, is They Live. I remember specifically the first time I saw the commercial for the movie. The movie came out in 1988, and I just happened to be like sitting in the living room watching TV or something like that, and a commercial comes on for this next movie coming out. Oh, okay, whatever it is. All of a sudden, I hear a guy talking. I'm like, that's Roddy Piper. I know that voice. How could I forget that voice? Holy shit, Roddy Piper's in a movie. What the hell is this movie? I have to see this movie. So that was my, wrestling, of course, my gateway drug as always, got me into seeing this movie.
And that was his first major film role, right?
Major film role, yes. So he had already done, I think Hell Comes to Frogtown had already been done. I think it was before that. And, of course, Walt and I know about the infamous movie Body Slam, which came out 86, 87.
He's done like a couple, like his, like, you know, like, you know, fucking Muscle Man number two or whatever, right?
No, actually, he never did stuff like that. That was kind of regulated to kind of your mid-card guys. He was too high up on the totem pole. I think him and Hogan had like the same agent. That's why they got all these great roles. But that was the gateway to me seeing the movie, and then see the movie, love it. The character of John Nada was very similar to Roderick Toombs, how Roddy Piper grew up, being homeless at one point in his life. He'd gotten into a lot of fights as a kid. He's been stabbed. He was in multiple car crashes and a plane crash. You name it, he was involved with it. So he knew the struggle of the character and could apply that to it. The movie has one of the best fight scenes, one of the most iconic fight scenes, I think, in any movie. So so good that South Park parodied it.
The entire like four and a half minute thing.
Yeah, it's not a parody. It's a rotoscoped shot for shot remake of it.
Just applying it to the different characters. So that shows you right there its influence as well. And as we touched upon, as years go by, more and more the socioeconomic subplot of the movie becomes more and more prevalent in our everyday lives. So, ooh, I silenced everybody on that one. Did I scare y'all?
Yeah.
I was actually going to say that, you know, it's one of them films where, like you pointed out, that Roddy Piper really knew this character. So you can almost – it's not to knock him by saying that he didn't have to really reach or stretch hard to, you know, find the motivation for this character.
Right.
But it's not to – say that is not to discredit the performance that he gives, because he really does – you know, if you're looking at it from the average, you know, mainstream mindset, you know, you got a dumb jock wrestler – generally who played a villain,
right,
and unlikable characters, fronting a movie.
Yep.
To be able to pull that off, you know, I mean, that's a testament to somebody who has a lot more ability than I think even today people give him credit for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it carried on. It's still, when you talk about people crossing over in from one genre or another, in from wrestling to movies or whatever, that one always comes up, because it's not just a great role, it's a great movie. You know, a lot of times,
and it has one of the most quotable lines in
I have come
history.
Here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
All out of bubblegum.
Written by Roddy Piper.
It was improvised by Roddy Piper. It right, man.
It wasn't improvised. No, it wasn't improvised. He had a notebook of all these different lines, and he gave the notebook to John Carpenter. And John looked at these different lines, and the line was in the movie. He's like, I like this one. Do this one. So that's how that was in the movie.
You know, it might be the second greatest line written by an actor compared to Tears in the Rain by Rucker Howard and Blade Runner. I think, really.
Well, okay, I got to trump that with, I'm sorry, the nerd in me is screaming at this one. Empire Strikes Back, Han Solo, Leia, I love you, I know.
Okay, I'll give you that.
You know, I'm going to have to even pull for a movie on this one that I'm not a huge fan of, but the whole fucking, I'm walking here. You know
what I mean? Yes! Yes! Midnight Cowboy, Rizzo.
From what I remember, George Clooney did ad-lib this in From Dusk Till Dawn when Cheech Marin asked if there was psychos. Like, what were they, psychos that attacked them at night? He says, they look like psychos, they were vampires. Psychos do not explode when exposed to fucking sunlight. I don't give a fuck how crazy they are.
Yep. Makes sense right there. So all kinds of great stuff that we can pull from John Carpenter. Countless great movies. We gave you so many on the list here. A lot of them crossed over too, but I'm sure everybody out there has got some favorites too. So Token Tom is enjoying himself there listening to that. Of course, you've heard that segment already here. So great talk there about John Carpenter. So let's get into our segments for the week. Walter, why don't you crack open that smoker? I could use a little snack right now. So let's talk. Let's get the fire going, man. Let's get the flames on high.
Before we do that real quick, before we get off the Carpenter thing, I'm sorry. I just wanted to throw in one thing that if you don't like Carpenter or whatever, you're not a big fan, one of the coolest quotes I've ever heard in my life comes from John Carpenter. And this can be one of those things that'll make or break it for you. But he said they asked him about how he felt about the remake of Halloween. Mm. And he said, you know, there's this really cool thing that happens. They approach me. They say, I want to make one of your movies. I hold up my hand, and a check falls in.
And a check falls in. Yep.
It's like, it's magic.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I don't even have to work.
It's beautiful.
You know, so.
It's amazing when it happens like that. It happens to me all the time.
Because
of all the stuff I invented.
Other people might feel like they got to have this pretense or, you know, whatever. John Carpenter is perfectly happy to say, I did what I did. I'm happy where I am. Whatever. You know, whatevs, dub, you know.
Thanks for the check. Later. Let's leave the money on the nightstand, sweetie. I'll call you in the morning. You have a nice day. All right.
I can totally picture him dabbing out of a fucking executive's office, you know?
I don't want to see
Carpenter peace out.
Dab. Yeah.
Going to a basketball game.
Peace out, dog.
Game.
Yeah, peace out, man. All right, Walter, now you can get the flames going. Let's get that smoker going.
Because of that, our Swedish meatballs are a little overcooked. In fact, they are in flames.
Dorky, 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 dorky.
Yes.
Okay. Well. Today, my original review was going to be Electric Wizard. I never really got a thing is though I didn't get a chance to finish listening to the record, so I will cover that next week with Token Tom.
Electric Wizard, random vibrator.
Because you know Tom loves that stoner metal.
Yes, he does.
So I'll make sure Nickelback? Tom is with us. We talk about that. Nickelback. I shared a Nickelback song that I liked on Facebook on the page, and Tom kind of like gave me grief for it.
Well, what do you expect?
because we're going against Tom's anti Nickelback vibe. Sorry, if Nickelback puts out a good song, I'm gonna say it's a good song. Anyways, back to In Flames.
They got a shit ton of platinum album. Somebody's got to be buying them fucking things.
Somebody.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Anyways, back to In Flames. Today, In Flames announced a surprise 4-song EP today, unannounced. There was no plans for it. They're like, hey, look at this, everybody. We're gonna drop this today. It is titled. Dead, Wicked, and No Good. Or no, Down and Wicked and No Good. Excuse me. It's a 4-song EP, all of covers, 15 and 20 minute EP of Alice in Chains' Down in a Hole, Depeche Mode's It's No Good, Chris Isaak's Wicked Game, and their own cover of Nine Inch Nails' Hurt.
Now, already in your voice, I can tell that this is not going to make the top 10.
No.
I think they shot themselves in the foot with that last one alone.
And here's the thing with In Flames. They are the big four, part of the big four of the Gothenburg Swedish metal scene, which is huge. I mean, metal in Sweden, Sweden is like the new Great Britain when it comes to metal. And the big four are In Flames, Dark Tranquility, Soilwork, and At the Gates. Okay. For that particular scene, and In Flames was considered one of the most influential bands of that era, and a lot of the new wave of American metal that came forth, like Killswitch Engage, As You Lay Dying, even Lamb of God, Fall. They were all Shadows Fall, all extremely influenced by In Flames, which brought forth this hybrid of thrash with melodic death metal. By the way, fuck you to the guys at Loudwire for giving me shit for saying I called In Flames a thrash metal band. Eat my shit, all right? So
he told
anyways, but over the years, In Flames is known for their progressive changes, and a lot of people are not very big on these changes. I, for one, I reviewed an In Flames album earlier this year, their recent LP, Battles. I was not too high on it. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't astonishing. But here's my problem with this. Musically, I mean, they get everything down. The Down and Holder is actually done with a piano, and it's fantastic musically. It's until Anders Fried and the lead vocalist starts singing. Anders has gone from this. He sounded very familiar, similar in a way to the guy from Black Dahlia Murder. Okay, putting this comparison down for Liz because we've been talking about Black Dahlia Murder lately in terms of his vocal styling. This is back when they were released the Jester Race and Horacle, Colony, Clayman, all fucking great albums, by the way. Now Anders wants to sound like Jonathan Davis, and it just doesn't work. It sounds like he's trying too hard to imitate Jonathan Davis. This is like when Bowie tried to be all gothy in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. He stopped after one album, but In Flames has fucking kept going since, let's try to sound like Korn for whatever reason. And everything sounds great until Anders starts singing, and that's what makes these songs unlistenable. And Down in the Hole is a great Alice in Chains song. Wicked Game by Chris Isaak is another fantastic song, but it sounds awful when Chris Isaak or when Anders sings it. It sounds great when Chris Isaak sings it. Excuse me.
Yeah.
And the video, Chris Isaak, Garth Brooks in a wig.
The one thing I remember from Wicked Game is that video.
And the chick in it is the ex-Miss Norman Reedus.
Oh my God, you're right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, good on you,
wait,
Norman.
Norman Reedus is a chick in the video?
He's an artist, man. Don't judge him.
Yep. It's No Good by Depeche Mode is one of my favorite Depeche Mode songs. I'm a huge Depeche Mode fan, and it's off of one of their albums from the 90s there. I think it was called Load?
Whiny
oh, my gosh.
Was that the Whiny Bitch album?
No, that's take your pick on that one.
That's every other elf.
That's every other elf. Sorry.
Depeche Mode are whiny bitches, but they're very good at it. So, but it's no good as one of my favorite Depeche Mode songs. And Amber Anders fucking shits all over that too. And I couldn't even finish the Nine Inch Nails cover. I'm a little disappointed in Flames, I gotta say. I don't like this direction they've taken. I tried, to get into it. I don't
I thought you said you cried. I was gonna say, wow, that's bad.
That's how bad it was. No,
I didn't cry. I don't mean to sound like these fans, like, oh, like Metallica's gotta go back to a fucking thrash metal sound. I just don't want In Flames to sound bad. I miss when they made good music. Okay, you don't have to go back. They don't have to go back and sound exactly like Jester Race or Horacle. It'd be pretty awesome if they did, but they don't have to. Do something. Take elements from things that are really good and change it around. Do something great out of it. Don't try to sound like something else. Yeah.
You want them to sound like them, not like Korn.
Yeah, In Flames, down, wicked, and no good.
It's no good.
It's good.
Yeah. And I'm not going to ask the proverbial Tom question because it does not have any crossover appeal, I can tell.
You know what? It might. It might. Because people, it just might have some crossover appeal because it does sound like In Flames is trying to sound like a radio band.
Yeah, but if they're covering songs that other people like and they're not doing it well, it's not going to cross over. So that's
right. But you're always going to have that segment of the population. That's just like, hey, I know that song, yeah!
Yeah.
And also, if you put the radio on nowadays and put on any pop station, you're going to ask yourself, people actually pay money to listen to this shit? And the sad answer is yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
somebody actually signed off on Limp Bizkit's cover of Behind Blue Eyes. That's all I've got to say.
Yeah, 21 Pilots, Imagine Dragons. Somebody explain the appeal to them.
I have no clue. I don't know what the hell these people are smoking or what they're drinking or doing together or taking absorbing rectum.
Have you ever seen the video for Lonely Boy from the 21 Pilots?
Nope.
No.
Don't plan
it's
to either.
It's literally a single camera shot of a black guy in a hallway, like in front of, like it's a hotel office or something, and he's standing in front of the office door, and he's just dancing in one spot to the point that it becomes awkward and you feel weird watching it.
people are probably calling it the best video of the year.
Of course, yeah. It'll win some kind of award.
I showed it to my drummer and it took me 5 minutes to convince him that that was the actual music video.
He's like, you're fucking with me, man. This ain't real. This ain't real. This ain't it.
He completely, I'm dead serious. It's exactly what he was saying. He was like, there's no fucking way. And I'd show them, look, this is their Vevo page right here, official music video. It's like, it's fucking insane, dude.
Well, with that being said, In Flames EP, it's not going to make the top 10, top 20, top 100 probably this year, folks. So, what can you say for that release there from In Flames? So we'll look forward to something better from them in the future. Don't be sorry. It's not your fault.
They should be sorry.
They should totally be sorry. They need to apologize with their next album. So, Elizabeth,
why don't you take
me in Walt's hand, and we're going to walk you down into the mortuary area, where a man, Azrael, has dug up something, I'd say, it's got a lot of energy. It's very adrenalized in some ways. And, oh, man.
It's time for Mordecai's Mortuary.
Listen to this right now. Yeah. Flashing back to 1992 or something like that.
This makes me want to go to a Denny's at 3 in the morning and drink coffee till 6.
Yeah, just bullshit with people. Yeah, man. Definitely. What do we got here, Oz?
Rosetta Stone, a seminal English goth industrial group. One of my favorites from back in the day. Put out a few albums and then kind of went south, split up in the early 90s. And I don't think they've done any reunions since then. Put out a lot of great material. This song specifically got known because it ended up getting worked onto a couple of compilation records. Anybody who was a collector of Cleopatra's Records, a goth line of records back in the day, had the Cleopatra goth rock CD set. This they broke in on that. A lot of people exposed to them from that. And ended up being on a bunch of other Cleopatra comps, and that kind of helped expose them. But they, a lot of goth bands that, you know, you get to the top of the shit pile, but you're still in the sewer. You know, it's not a huge market. So, you know, you can be a legendary goth band and still be picking up trash. You know, and that's your day job.
Yeah, it doesn't hold a lot of credibility. It's like, you know, famous Jewish sports legends from Airplane.
it's very much like that first year after, or so after Pete Steele released Bloody Kisses. You know,
yeah, he's still working for the city.
Yeah, he's still hauling trash. You know, signing CDs occasionally, embarrassed as shit. You know.
That's what it takes sometimes, but yeah. So Rosetta Stone, Adrenaline.
Yep.
Is the name of the track.
Adrenaline.
Adrenaline. Excuse me. Adrenaline.
This song is about drug addiction.
That seems to be the
most I can get from it. When you got lines like dust sprinkling inside of me and whatnot. You know, white lines. This time I'm on Adrenaline. You know.
Wow.
But this is a great workout tune. You know, this is something you want to punch a speed bag to, or go jogging to, or get into a fight to. This is on my mix when I'm playing fighting games. You know, just because it's high energy. And overall, their catalog is pretty solid along these lines. So if you like this, this is a band I would definitely recommend.
Well, I have no axe to give this week, but I do have a saw. In fact, it's a Jigsaw. Yes, I finally got to see the new Saw movie entitled Jigsaw this past week with a friend of mine, and I've been waiting to see this movie for a while now. And I can't say I was disappointed in it, but I can't say it's the best Saw movie ever. Now, I know everybody out there is going to say, what, there's a good Saw movie? Well, fuck you, because I am the Saw fan of this podcast. But I did enjoy the movie. I liken this to Saw fan fiction, basically. Because it's taking the characters you know, or at least the one major character you know, and, you know, trying to update it for modern times. But what do you do when the character's dead? Well, they had to go through a little bit of an ex machina there to make that happen, as they always do. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody who hasn't seen the movie yet. The movie in and of itself, from top to bottom, you know, definitely in the Saw feel, of course. It's a Saw movie right off the bat. There's action in the movie. There's plenty of guts and gore that'll keep you satisfied if that's your interest, of course. It has the typical twists and turns that a Saw movie has. Being an avid fan of the series, I knew to always keep my eyes open for any little detail that was coming up in the movie. Always make a mental note of that, because it was probably going to come up in the big reveal near the end of the movie. A couple of things I got right, a couple of things I missed. I do have to say Tobin Bell is in the movie as John Kramer. How, I'm not going to tell you, but he puts in another solid performance. I mean, Tobin Bell, across the board, is a fantastic actor. You look at any of the stuff he does, and he's so in tune with the character he's doing, and he owns the John Kramer character and the Saw, you know, the Jigsaw persona in these films. Other performances in the movie are passable at best. Matt Passmore, who's one of the main characters in the movie, is okay. Colm Keith Rennie, who plays the disgruntled, typical detective, is pretty good, being an asshole. And I don't know if you guys know who this chick is, Hannah Emily Anderson. Oh my God. My future ex-wife. This chick is so hot. She plays an orderly underling type person in a lab. She's just smoking hot. So just for that reason alone, you should see the movie. And I was watching the movie, and I'm like, hey, that looks like Mario Van Peebles. And sure enough, it was his son Mandela. So I have a good eye for details there. So overall, the movie's good, not great. I did enjoy it. The ending scene, the last thing that happens in the movie, is one of the most innovative, gory kills I've ever seen. So I'd recommend it too for that, for the artistry involved. And leaves the franchise open for another one, which I'm hoping we don't have to wait too long if we do get another one. So that's my quick review there for Jigsaw. If you're a fan of the Saw movies, I definitely recommend you go check it out. If you're not a big fan, watch it anyway just so you can hate watch it and bitch about it later on the internet, because that's what everybody loves to do. So,
exactly. You know, one of my favorite bits about Saw is Shawnee Smith.
Yes.
Oh. Is she in this movie?
No, she's not. No, she is not. No. None of the old characters. Carrie Elwes isn't in it. Constance Mandalore isn't in it. The only old character is John Kramer. Tobin Bell is John Kramer as Jigsaw. So, Walter, I think, was going to say something.
Oh, I was going to say, I love Shawnee Smith in anything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
Shawnee Smith rules. And she's a musician.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. So, very, very artsy, cool chick. So, well, been another great show here. Elizabeth Gray, you got a lot of stuff going on these days. Please tell us what kind of stuff your listeners and our listeners can look forward to hearing from you.
Oh, well, thank you for giving me a moment here. My next episode is this coming Tuesday of Archivist Bets on Sexy Witches. You can find us on Facebook or on Blog Talk or on Twitter at The Sexy Witches. And we have a really, really amazing interview. We are, this is always our annual. November is our These Are a Few of Our Favorite Things, which is our 2017 Best of Show. And definitely two of those favorite things would be the Soska sisters. So Twisted Twins are going to be on the show. They just did a panel today at Chicago's Days of the Dead, which you can find online. Really, really excited to interview these women, no matter how you feel about their films, because I know some people don't like their movies at all. The women themselves are the coolest, most genuine, honest, amazing women I've met in a long time, and I can't wait to interview them, and I am so excited.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be fanboying and all of that goddamn thing myself personally, because I love the Soska twins. So, all kinds of great stuff happening there. You got any more stuff going on you can tell us about?
Well, no, actually, I'm really glad, because I'm finally, the madness is over. We had a winner on that, and my last season, this is the end of season 3 for my show. We have one more show after that in December, by the way, I just saw The Disaster Artist, and that's what we're going to do the show on, is the phenomenon of The Room and The Disaster Artist. So I'm not going to review it here. You're going to have to wait and listen to my show in December. But, you know, it definitely, I think we're going to hear a lot about this movie in a few weeks.
I have been so looking forward to this since I heard it was going to be, since it had actually gone into production.
Have you read the book, Azrael?
I have not read the book.
I have read the book.
I've seen the movie a million times. I have watched the Riff Trax version a million times. I've seen several documentaries about it. It's one of them things that, like, I've found so much amusement out of, because, you know, on one level it sucks really bad, and on the other level, there's something about it that kind of makes you want to watch all the way to the end.
It gives really filmmakers hope. It gives us hope. Because if Tommy Wiseau can produce this film, release it, and find his audience, which is most of how you survive in this business, is finding your audience, anybody can find their audience.
He got more airtime off a bad movie than a lot of people get off a decent movie.
Tommy Wiseau has more success making a bad movie than the director of the Boondock Saints.
Troy Duffy,
who was pretty much banned from Hollywood because he kept bad mouthing everybody. So,
well, at least he didn't hit the Lars von Trier level.
Yeah, Lars von Trier still makes movies left and right, and they're all weird,
oddly
off putting.
I prefer chocolate. Anyway, what is this off-putting? Why would I eat off-putting? I prefer chocolate. So, it's late. What do you expect? So, you paid for this, folks. Actually, you didn't, so you're getting what you're paid for. So anyway, all kinds of great stuff that Elizabeth Gray is providing you folks out there, so keep checking her on her social media as well. Keep tabs on her. You know she's going to be coming back on this show. We have too much fun when she is on here, so we'll definitely be having her back on again as soon as we can possibly have her. Next week, I think Tom should be back. We might have the old crew all back together again. It's been a while. We're getting close to the end of 2017, folks, which means coming soon is going to be the big top 10 list, the top list of top favorites, horror movie and heavy metal releases for 2017, so look forward to that. And coming soon, of course, will be our special Star Wars Last Jedi show, because apparently Siths are scary. Not my words.
Quick question, though. What kind of releases will we be covering?
Quality release. Yes.
Actually, I should also point out, next week, not only I will be reviewing Electric Wizard, but Tom and I will finally be talking about the Mike Lombardo independent film I'm Dreaming of a White Doomsday, which Tom and I both got. So we'll both be talking about that.
All right.
So which Electric Wizard are you going to be reviewing?
Wizard Bloody Wizard.
The 5-volt version or the 9-volt?
Oh, right.
Ba-dum-ching. So, plenty of more great stuff coming at you.
There's that one that runs on 4 D-cell batteries, but that's the size of a mag light.
Yeah, dude. That thing will take you to the edge and back. So, all kinds of great stuff coming at you.
Hold my beer.
Try to get through it. It's all kinds of great stuff coming at you here on the NecroCasticon in the next few weeks as we're counting down the end of 2017. So hope you have a great week out there. We thank you all very much for listening. Once again, keep supporting the NecroCasticon. Keep supporting Project Entertainment Network. Look us all up on our social medias and keep supporting all of us too, because we would so much appreciate that. So if you're listening to this week coming up, we want to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving out there, and have a good holiday time with your families if you can. Enjoy that bird if you're partake in it. And if you don't, eat a turducken, eat a Cthulhu ducken. You've seen those things out there? I think they're fantastic. So I think it'd be something to check out eventually. So with that, for the absent Token Tom Clark, who checked out John Carpenter, for Smokin' Walt Ball, for Azra Mordecai, and for the lovely and talented and wonderful Elizabeth Catherine Gray, who we appreciate having on here, this is Mr. Scott. Want to wish you all have a good week there. Take care then, and this show is closed.
Gobble, gobble.
The NecroCasticon is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network and is written and produced by Thomas Clark, Scott Groveston, Walter Ball, and Azriel Mordecai. Music provided by The Nightkeep, written by Daniel Edenfield.
One of the backup singers, who I guess was his sister-in-law or something, she was cremated, her ashes were dumped. Fucking the urn was broken open.
Yeah, God, what was it? Susan something. Oh, yeah.
And this was in late September. This happened.
Really?
And I'm just now hearing about it this week.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, totally buried that story.
Kind of a sick fuck would do something like that. My God.
I mean, was it's not it? Even... Anyway. Ugh.
I'm sorry. Ladies first.
Yeah. No. Go ahead. I'm just like, was this a attack on Leonard Skinner, or was it just happened to be their grave that they violated?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like, it's kind of one of those things where you can't even say, like, it was just some random act, because who the fuck wouldn't know that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if you got Ronnie Van Zant buried in your town, you probably know where he is, you know?
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.